You've joined Robert Rogers at Parkinson's Recovery. This is a very special event. Today, I am going to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart. It is to discuss all of the reasons why recovery gets stuck in the mud. And by that I mean, for some reason, we are unable to jumpstart ourselves into taking positive action. I can assure you that what each and every individual tells me who is getting incredible relief from their symptoms is the following. They experiment. They try things. They keep what works and they drop what doesn't work. They use combinations of approaches and therapies. Many of them don't cost anything at all. And some of them, of course, do cost some money to be able to pay therapists and people to help them do what it is that they need to do. But the bottom line is they are always out there experimenting, and for good reason. Their bodies are shifting. Their bodies are changing. What is needed today will likely be very different from what is needed 6 months or a year from now. And as you know, for those of you who are listening and do have the symptoms of Parkinson's, those symptoms themselves are a moving target. They shift from week to week and month to month, and that basically means that the needs that are calling out to us by our bodies all of a sudden are shifting. And yes, it is necessary for us to continually go out and seek out therapies, modalities, and approaches that can help us get enormous relief from our symptoms. So, why is it that all of us, you, me, everyone on this planet, gets stuck in the mud? Our minds tell us that, yes, I know that if I seek out and experiment and begin trying things, the chances are quite good that I will be able to get relief from my symptoms. That's what the mind says, but for some reason, the body gets stuck. The body literally gets stuck in the mud. We can't pick our feet up to make any positive movement forward. Friend after friend, family member after family member consult with us, and with an open and loving heart, they say, honey, why don't you try? And then they have, of course, one suggestion after another. And we say to ourselves, oh, those are good ideas. But what happens for some reason is we simply fail to take action. We don't move forward. And we ask ourselves, what is it that is the reason why I simply am unable to do anything for myself? Well, this particular teleseminar session today is the first in a series of explanations that I'm going to offer for why that happens. Why everybody at points in their life gets stuck in the mud and is unable to take positive action to help themselves feel better and recover from whatever symptoms they may be experiencing. So, this is not necessarily an explanation that will totally and completely apply to you. But my good guess is part of this explanation will apply to you, because I know from working with many, many people, it applies to all of us. The explanation that I'm going to give to you now for why we get stuck in the mud and why those hormones refuse to balance themselves out is that we are carrying unconsciously a feeling and a series of thoughts that cluster around that feeling. The umbrella that underpins this is the following thought. There is not enough of anything for me. There's not enough of anything for me. Unconsciously, we are unable to literally fill ourselves up. We are unable to give to ourselves And most importantly, we are unable to receive. Think about the implications this has for balancing hormones. The hormones of dopamine and serotonin and melatonin are all receiving hormones. Those hormones get activated when we are in that mode of receiving the blessings and the gifts of the universe that are given to us. The alternative hormones are just the reverse. Those, as you know, those hormones of adrenaline and all of the other cluster of hormones that are connected to adrenaline, including cortisol, are those that get activated when we are in the active motion, when we are out there doing things. We are active. We are making things happening. We are giving to the world. There's a huge then difference in the cluster of hormones that are connected to doing for others and giving to others versus the cluster of hormones that are connected to being able to receive, being able to take in when gifts and blessings are given to us. It makes sense to me that hormones will be permanently out of balance for me or for anyone, particularly with the symptoms of hormones, if the ability and the skills of giving are not balanced by the ability and skills of receiving. If then we are so active all the time, if we are then so giving all the time to others and unable to accept and receive, then over a long period of time, there will be instituted in our physical bodies a literally permanent imbalance of those intricate set of over 40 hormones that are circulating throughout our body at all points in time. The key then is in being able to receive. I'd like to give you some examples because this topic is near and dear to my heart, and it is one that I have been working on in preparation for this session today all week long. How is receiving difficult for me? Let me explain how it works for me. I will be walking down downtown Olympia, Washington, and I will, by surprise, confront a friend I haven't seen for months and months. On the sidewalk, we both look at each other, and we say, well, hello, it's been a while since I've seen you. And my friend looks at me, who hasn't seen me in months and months, and they say, you look great. What do I do? I mean, you're talking about a millisecond of time, respond back, you look great. Do you see what I just did, and do you see what I do all the time? I don't pause and basically take in that compliment. I don't let my body, my emotions, my intellect receive the kindness that was just extended to me. It's a matter of routine, and at least now I'm able to acknowledge when I do it, and now when somebody gives me a compliment, I pause, I take a breath, and I say to myself, receive, receive, take that in now. A second example, a little example that is representative of many, many, many different types of circumstances I've confronted just in the last few months. Deborah and I are at the grocery store, and we really went in to purchase two items. Well, I should say one item, but we wound up with two items. And we're standing at a checkout line where a man is already standing in line. He's a gentle-looking man who has a very kind face. I look in his basket, and he has about 12 or 14 items. So it's not going to take him long to check out. And he looks, I've never seen this man before, he looks up at Deborah and I, and he said, oh, you only have two items? Deborah was holding one item, I was holding another, and we both said yes. And he said, oh, please, go in front of me. And we both looked at each other, and our instant reaction, because we both have a challenge with receiving, we said instantly, oh, but you don't have many items either. And then we both got it. And he said, no, no, I don't mind. We both got it, and then realized, oh, right, here it is. Here's the opportunity to receive. So we both looked at him and said, thank you. And we very graciously walked right in front of him. It took us 30 seconds to purchase our items in cash, and we were gone. That's it. Now, I can't begin to count the number of times when I have confronted a circumstance that's very similar to that in my life, where somebody extended to me an offer to do something, and I immediately, without thought, rejected that offer. What I said to myself is, or perhaps not out loud, I'd rather do it myself. I don't need any help. What do you think? I can't do it myself. I have all of these thought forms that get instantly activated that then give me an excuse or a reason to reject that offer of help. Or one of the best ones that I use is, oh, it's more trouble for me to let you do it than for me to do it myself. Does that sound familiar to you? That, again, is an excuse that we use for pushing away offers from people to give to us. So the key idea that I am conveying to you is there is a very important energy that underpins being able to balance our hormones out. And that energy is to be able to open ourselves up to receive what is offered to us. When a present is given to us, regardless of what it is or where it comes from, the energy that is key to being able to balance hormones is to be able to receive that present, to take it in, to open it up, and to acknowledge that that is a present that is given in love for you, specifically for you, and to take that in. So one of, I think, the underlying dynamics that creates the perplexing imbalance of hormones in our bodies and that create the symptoms of Parkinson's are this imbalance in the ability to give and the ability to receive. I'm sure that you are well aware, if you have connected with many other people who have the symptoms of Parkinson's, that there is a profile of people who have Parkinson's, and that profile basically is a profile of success and accomplishment. People who had symptoms of Parkinson's have accomplished great feats in their life. It's really remarkable to hear the stories of what people have done in their lives. Ask the people that you know who have the symptoms of Parkinson's, so what have you been able to receive in your life? And the chances are the list is pretty short. People with the symptoms of Parkinson's are doers, they're shakers, they're movers, they're people who make a difference in the world. But of course, the challenge over time is, if that's all that's happening for a person, if they are simply giving and moving and shaking up the world by their actions, then they are going to have an institutionalization of an imbalance of hormones in their bodies. So, not being able to receive is the core issue that is at play for many people who have the symptoms of Parkinson's. Where does this come from? Why is it that I have such a challenge receiving and so many other people have such a challenge receiving? There are many answers, but one of the most common answers is that our mothers either died when we were very young, or our mother was not there for us for one reason or another. She was simply not able to be present with us and for us as a child. In other words, she withdrew her contact with us when we were children. This can take many different forms. The form I know that is clearly evident in my life is that my mother did not breastfeed, so I never had that feeling of being able to receive directly from my mother. It was common in the mid or late 1940s for mothers not to breastfeed. It was basically what women did. And so she followed suit and did what was the standard accepted approach for taking care of a young child. My mother was also a child of 9 years old who was abandoned by her father. She dearly and desperately loved her father, but that's my grandfather, but as it turns out, he had an alcoholic problem, and he wound up taking a bit too much from the till in the accounting company that he worked for as an accountant, and he was actually put in jail for 5 years. So she was permanently abandoned by her father. So my mother was abandoned by her father and was then not able to learn how to receive from others, and clearly she was unable to give to her own children for just that reason. What does a child do in that circumstance? Well, I'm sure there are different reactions, but I can tell you what my reaction was, my reaction of basically being abandoned by my mother. And remember, this is a perceptual issue. This was my perception as a child. I'm clearly not saying that my mother did not do many, many, many wonderful things for me. She clearly did. She took care of me when I was sick. But there is an energetic implant that a child receives and perceives, which is that implant of abandonment. What I did as a child was to strike out with early independence. I became my own little boy. I packed a suitcase and I was ready to leave home at the age of 4, and that's all I could think about was being able to set up house on my own. Did I have problems receiving as a child? You betcha. Do I find it difficult to receive today? No question about it. So how does this play out in my life today, and I think in the life of anybody who finds that it's difficult to receive? I find it's difficult to ask for what I need. Why don't I do that? Because my thought is, if I ask, it will not be given. So I simply stop even wondering what it is that I need. I don't even think about it. I have no needs. Don't ask. I can't be turned down. So that solves the problem. Do you see what that does to my inability then to receive anything from anybody? I assume that nobody's going to give me anything. Again, these are deep, unconscious emotional issues that get set very early in our lives. I try to get nourishment where from then? And the answer is, I get it from other people. This is going to sound pretty harsh, so I'm going to talk about myself. I tend to suck the energies from other people. I basically take their pre-digested energy and I take it for my own rather than digesting the energy for myself. It's really quite clever in a way. You don't have to do it yourself. You can always get it from somebody else. And of course, the sad part of it is, it's never enough. Not any of the energy I suck in from anybody else is ever going to be enough, because the only way I'll be able to receive is to do it myself, is to take that energy in from within my own body, my own physical body, and my own energy sense system. So I have and I carry a profound sense of emptiness inside. How is this also played out for me and others who have been abandoned as a child in one way or another? We wind up spending all of our time taking care of other people and their needs. So if anybody has a problem, we're there to be able to help out with it. We wind up being caretakers. And that, you see, is a defense. It really, in a way, is a really wonderful thing to do, to take care of other people, but it is also a defense. If I'm always taking care of other people, then I'm not attending to my own needs. I'm not taking care of myself. Why do I think that the wounding of abandonment, which causes this unconscious problem of never being enough, is an issue for Parkinson's? And the answer is because I get many, many emails and I have many telephone conversations with people who have the following story. The conversations are typically with the individual who is a caretaker or a spouse or a child or a parent of a person who has the symptoms of Parkinson's, and they tell me the following. They say, you know, this is so frustrating for me. I keep making suggestions to my father, my child, my wife, my husband, whoever it might be, that they might look at your website, or they might call this person, or I saw that a person you interviewed suggested this or that, and I suggested that to them, but I can't get them to even look at it. I can't get them to even think about the possibility this will help them feel better. I'm really at a loss. What am I supposed to do? I can't begin to tell you the number of conversations I have just like that, and my answer is there's nothing you can do. There's only one reaction, and that is to take care of yourself, to begin to take care of your own personal needs, whatever they might be, and see if that then transmutes over to them. So the problem, the underlying problem, is the person who has the wounding of abandonment can never, ever get enough. The person does not look within themselves to be filled. They are always looking outside of themselves to be filled up. And again, I want to remind you that never works. There's never enough out there to fill the person up. So what are the reactions of this person who has the wounding of abandonment? Typically, a person who holding the thought form that there is not enough will be looking for anybody or anyone who can fix them. It's not a question of looking inside themselves or asking their bodies, what do you need? It's a question of looking outside of themselves and asking, okay, what about stem cells? Are they going to fix me? After all, the president has just opened up research on stem cell research. So the thought form will be, oh, that's great. That's going to fix me. Or the thought form will be, well, I'm volunteered to be a part of a study on a new medicine. Maybe that will fix me. So all of the energy is devoted toward looking outside for answers rather than checking inside and asking, well, what do I need? And then being able to simply receive it. The key to the healing of this, then, if in fact abandonment is your own wounding, is first to make it conscious, is to say, okay, that's right. I can think back as a child where I did have a sense of being abandoned by an uncle, an aunt, a grandfather, a grandmother. Somebody in my family died very early or left me that I loved, or my mother was not there for me. Whatever the abandonment might have been, you simply acknowledge that it is a conscious issue in your life. And the second step is to learn how to nourish yourself, or how I learn how to nourish myself. So I want to say again, how does this play out with a person? And this, you may find this sounds like somebody like you, or if you are a person who's taking care of another, it may sound like the person you're taking care of. The person will say, well, I'm not going to pay for anything that costs any money, or any therapy that costs any money. Again, that's a refusal to be able to receive. They're not going to ask because it won't be given. Do you see where the root of that thought form comes from? Of course it's rational to think that you need to be able to pay a pharmacist for medicines, isn't it? Of course it's reasonable to think you ought to be able to pay for a doctor for their services. Then why not think it's also reasonable to be able to pay a massage therapist for their services, or a cranial sacral therapist, or a psychologist who might be able to provide you with some insights of thought forms that are impediments to your own feelings? So again, when a person says, well, I'm not going to do anything that costs any money, that is what we call a defense. That's underneath that is the deep and underlying and always unconscious feeling, there's not enough for me. And again, to summarize, the root reason for that feeling is abandonment. Let me stress, because this is such an ingrained energy in a person, it is an underlying reason why the hormones will not balance themselves out. If the person is not able to receive, the person will never be able to have a balance of hormones, and there will always be symptoms that are floating around their bodies. So the challenge for anyone that has the wounding of abandonment is to learn how to metabolize your own energy instead of relying on the pre-digested energy of others, instead of sucking basically on the energy of others. You are very familiar with people who do this. Friends that you are with, if they are sucking your energy, you will notice that you will get very fatigued after 10 or 15 or 30 minutes. You'll get absolutely exhausted. That's because they had the wounding of abandonment more than likely, and they are sucking on your life force. They do it unconsciously. You have to forgive them. It's a smart thing for them to do. It works. They get a lot more energy themselves. But it's nowhere near a permanent solution for them. They are always feeling empty inside. I want to also relate this wounding to another symptom of Parkinson's, and that's the difficulty of talking. People oftentimes who have the wounding of abandonment, whether they have the symptoms of Parkinson's or not, will talk softly. You can't see this now, but I'm raising my hand. I do this quite often. Why do I talk softly? And again, remember, I have the wounding of abandonment, and I have that deep wounding of there not being enough. I talk softly because people have to get closer to me. They have to pay attention. And so I found it's very successful. They'll say, what, huh? And they look and they physically get closer. That's exactly what I hope will happen. So for people who are having voice problems, part of the underlying reasons for the softness of talking is that energetic feeling of there not being enough. The way that that is healed through certain therapies is to speak loudly and proudly. And so in voice therapy courses, what they teach you to do is to put it out there, is to literally shout, is to yell. And that's exactly right. That means that you're helping to heal that underlying wounding of abandonment. So there are many symptoms that can be explained by this deep underlying emptiness that we feel inside, which has its roots in the, as a child, abandonment that we actually experienced. I have a couple of questions that I'm going to read and respond to that are directly related to my topic. Then I'm going to go into a healing for this challenge. The first question comes from Judy D. from Rockford, Illinois. The question is, how effective is myofascial release in helping Parkinson's? I have been going through it the last year, and it seems that my Parkinson's hasn't progressed much, especially with walking. That sounds absolutely awesome, and it makes good sense to me, given all the work I've done with understanding how trauma affects the symptoms of Parkinson's. Yes, any type of body therapy that helps release stress and trauma is going to provide some release to the symptoms of Parkinson's, and you've already expressed it in your letter. you are noticing that there's been no progression. In fact, if you actually track your symptoms, as you can on the symptom tracker on our main page of the website, you'll probably be surprised to discover that your symptoms are actually getting better if you're doing this body work that allows for a release of the stress and trauma in your body. You see, the wounding of abandonment is the wounding of stress and trauma for a child. It's very traumatic to be abandoned by a mother. So there it is. And the myofascial release, along with Bowen therapy or cranial sacral therapy or particular types of body work, can be marvelous interventions to be able to help release the trauma. The second question is much longer, and so what I'm going to do is read it much more slower. It comes from MM from Harrisville. What correlation is there between candida and Parkinson's disease? My initial answer to that is there's been no direct research by research scientists that's looked at the direct connection. What I can tell you about what I've observed is there is a indirect correlation between the two, and let me explain. Candida is a word that represents live entities that are inside our bodies. They circulate throughout our physical bodies. These live entities are able to hold thought forms. If we are holding a number of negative thought forms, and by this I mean the thought form is, I can never get enough, or the thought form is, I can never fill myself up enough, or the thought form is, there is never enough, or the thought form is, if I ask, it never will be given. Those are all negative thought forms. They're not true. But if we have a lot of the live bacterial entities or candida in our bodies, those live bacteria and candida will help sustain those negative thought forms. I know that's true. I haven't proved it scientifically, but I know, in fact, that's the case. Now, there's another issue with candida that I want to alert all of you to that I've just discovered. The candida actually eats bacteria in the body. You may be a person who's suffering from a flare-up of candida problems or yeast infection problems in your body. That actually may be because your body instituting a flare-up of the candida to fight the bacteria. The candida actually fight the bacteria. So the real issue that you may be confronting is a bacterial infection that may have roots in a root canal that you had done years ago, or there may be an infection somewhere in your body that's the root cause of that. There might have been an infection in your intestinal system that was brought down to tolerance, but it's still bubbling about and has been for quite a while. So these bacteria can circulate in our bodies and create havoc, and sometimes the body then activates candida as a way of keeping the bacteria at bay. I want to continue with MM's question. How much do genetics play in a disease such as PD? We know there have been massive numbers of studies that look at the connections of genes from family members who have Parkinson's, and there are about 7 or 8 genes that have actually been identified, mutations of genes that are connected with the symptoms of Parkinson's. I would suggest that you think about this in a very different way. Think about it in a family system, how there is a template that is set for a way of being. In a family, then, if the way of being is to always be out there in the world and active, doing things, making things happen, if there is an energy of assertion in the family system and an inability to receive, then there is instituted throughout all members of the family system a template which is imbalanced. In other words, the giving is not balanced with the receiving. It is simply impossible for any living entity to give all the time. We give out. We have to have a cycle of life force. There has to be an ebb and flow. There has to be a tide of living. So we, while are giving, we can also flip our feedback and receive. There has to be both in order for there to be the ability to continue life. So I think of genetics more as a family belief template that has its roots in an underlying thought form. And again, from the earlier teleseminars, you know that the underlying issues with all disease are thoughts. And of course, that's what we're talking about today. M.M. Continues with the question. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 2 years ago. I lost a son to suicide. That in itself is the trauma of all traumas. There, in my understanding and experience, is no greater trauma to a parent than to lose a child for whatever reason. She continues, and a year later had all of my amalgam dental fillings removed and replaced with porcelain fillings. That's so that the toxins from the mercury and other metals in the fillings can be removed from her body. Then she continues, about 6 months later, I began noticing symptoms that concerned me. My father had Parkinson's disease following a fall where he hit his head pretty hard. Now, as a side comment, that will clearly happen. Some people with the symptoms of Parkinson's have them because of a physical injury to the head. That's the direct reason. And so there's a damage to the cells that actually produce the hormones in the body. So the key for healing for him would have been to begin to rejuvenate the cells. She continues, he had a long, fierce battle with Parkinson's disease for 20 years. Now, I'd like to just reflect on the words, a long, fierce battle. If you sink into those words, can you get a sense of the feeling of doing, of fighting, of making it happen? What do you sense about receiving? Well, I don't get any sense of that. I get a sense of doing, but not a sense of receiving. So you can see just in those words, for him, there probably was not a balance of doing and receiving in his life. She continues, and I took care of him for much of that time. So she was the caretaker. She continues, I believe my symptoms are related to the trauma of losing my son, being a single parent for 25 years, and ultimately having my amalgam filling removed without protection. So apparently some of the metals that were in the amalgams must have leaked throughout her system. She says, I didn't know what was needed at the time, was not informed until months later. As a side note, for those of you who have any thoughts about getting your amalgams or removed, there are dentists that are specially trained to be able to do that. They're called biological dentists, and it's a very good idea to get one of those individuals to help with the removal of amalgams so that you don't, when they're removed, have a massive influx of the metals, the heavy metals that are in the amalgams that is infused into the cells of your body. So she suggests, did losing my son and having the stress of being a single parent and then having the stress of having her amalgams removed, would that be perhaps related to the symptoms that she's experiencing? And from my interviews with people, from my research, the answer is absolutely yes. The traumas that you've experienced are clearly going to provoke a sustained imbalance in your hormonal balances. She continued, I am so grateful for the information I have come to read about the possibility of full recovery of Parkinson's and of getting the body back into balance. I have enjoyed this site immensely and appreciate the great deal of information that it contains and the fact that it is updated continuously. And I would like to also say something about myself. I knew that that part of the letter was going to come, and I almost didn't read it. I thought, well, I don't need to read that because this is not actually related to the discussion that I have in the teleseminar today. Do you see what I almost just did? I almost did not take in and receive that wonderful compliment. The ability to receive is a lifetime challenge for me, and as I think it is a lifetime challenge for anyone that has the wounding of abandonment. I would like to begin tracking my symptoms so that I can begin a 12-step program. And here she's referring to a program that John Coleman offers to people of being able to recover. And she said, and track my progress. However, I am unable to register for the tracking. Anybody can register for tracking on the symptom tracker by going to the main page on the website. That's ParkinsonsRecovery.com. And you'll see symptom tracker is listed right up there on the main page. You just click on that. To register, you have to give your email address and a password that you want to try to remember. But if you can't, you can always ask to be reminded later on. And you use that same email address to track your symptoms from now forever. So you can do it every month, every 2 weeks, every 3 months, and it'll give you a chart to see what the symptoms are looking like. She finishes, thank you so much for all you have done to give those of hope where none was thought possible. As I pause myself and allow myself to take that in, let me now offer to MM an exercise that I think will be instrumental to your own healing. And I invite anyone out there who has lost a child or lost a parent or lost a loved one to do the very same exercise. MM, I invite you now to bring forth in your imagination your son and allow your son to be present to you on your left side. I invite you now to bring forth your father and invite your father to be present to you on your right side. Feel their presence. Allow them to be here with you now. I have words I invite you now to say to each of them. Please look at your son eye to eye and say to your son the following, either out loud or silently. I honor your choice. I honor your choice. And to your father, look to him. As he is with you now, and say the same to him. I honor your choices. And to each, to your son and to your father, I invite you to say the following. I choose to stay here on this earth longer, but I will join you later. And now receive the blessing of both your son and your father, for they give their blessings to you to move forward in your own life. For there is still work to be done for you here on this earth. Taking in their blessing now and receiving their blessing in all of its wonder. and feeling their support for you now, the support of your son and the support of your father, always here, always present. And now I invite all who are listening to follow with me on this healing journey, a journey that is configured to help you receive and to balance hormones. Imagine, if you would, please, the most wonderful and magical and exciting city that you have always wanted to visit in the world, wherever that city might be, for you now will go there to that city. And as you arrive in this city, scan around and find the tallest building, the building that reaches out to the sky higher than any other in this magical, wondrous place called a city. Position yourself on the bottom floor of this most magical building now. Notice there is an elevator, one particular elevator to the very left of all elevators. In this bottom floor of this building, you are the only one waiting for an elevator. Push the button up and allow the elevator on the very left to open. The bell rings. Please enter the elevator now, all by yourself. Allow the door to shut. See the lights turn on, and notice this elevator is quite so special because it is made of gold. There are so many floors on the front panel, they are written in such small numbers, it is difficult to see what the top floor is, but there is a button at the top, so push the very top button. Push it now, and allow the elevator to rise up the building. And as you stand in this elevator, look around and notice that it is not just an elevator that is made of pure gold. There are live plants in the corners of the elevator with orchids and spring flowers. There are oh so delightful smells to be smelled. And your most favorite of all music is playing on this elevator as well. Oh, and did you notice over in one corner, there is the most comfortable chair you have ever sat in. Sit in that chair now. Oh, and right to the next, there is a table with a drink. The drink that is so special to you. Have a drink. Relax. Take it in. Take in the smells. This ride is for you. This elevator goes up and up and up and up and to the very ethers of the skies. And finally, after you've had enough of your drink to sip, stops as the door now opens. So stand up, there's no reason to rush, and see what's on this very top floor of this building. Go ahead and walk into a reception room. In this reception room, all of the people who have meant something to you in your life are present. Those who gave your life, your mother and your father, your grandfathers, your grandmothers, people who are living and who are not living are here in this reception area. People you have missed and haven't seen because they are living or not living. Receive their greetings now, but no need to respond and no need to say anything. Simply take it in. Receive their love and their blessings now. Their looks, their smiles, the love that exudes from their hearts. Feel those that want to surround you very closely. And notice, too, those that are on the outer ring of this welcoming group of friends and family. Those you have known in your life who are appreciative of all you have done for them. Make a way to receive their blessing, too. For they are here to thank you for all that you have done for them. Allow them to circle you now, saying nothing to them, simply taking in their appreciation, taking in what it has truly meant to them for you to have done what you did for them. Take it in. Take all of their blessings in now. See who's here to greet you. The room has to be big to fill all who are here to thank you for what you have done for them. People you haven't seen for many years are present now. Welcome them. Take in their thanks. Take in their blessing, each and every one. And even further, on the very outskirts of this room, there are strangers, people that you really don't know. You don't know their name. You don't know really anything about them. These people you have also done things for. Allow them to thank you now too. Receive their blessing now. In this crowded room, find now your mother, who will be your escort to a room straight ahead. Allow her to take your hand and to walk you to this room as the rest of the crowd splits away and allows you to walk straight ahead, saying nothing, taking in all that is present for you here now. And at this door, there is your name with a nameplate. Your mother looks at you and says, "This room is for you. Enter it now." And she opens the door. Hear the applause of all those in the reception room as you enter into this room. The door shuts behind you. The lights turn on. And in this room that is yours, you are standing all alone. There's just you. and this room, there is no furniture. There are no pictures. The walls are empty. There is only a curtain in front of you. Walk to the curtain now. Hear your footsteps on the floor as a tap dancer might dance across the floor. Step by step by step, walking to the curtain in this room all by yourself. And of course, since it is a curtain, you now must open that curtain to see what is on the other side. Open the curtain now. What is there behind this curtain is a mirror. What you see is yourself. Exactly the way you look now. Look at this person now. Take all of who is here in. All the majesty, all the wonder, all the beauty, all the intelligence, all the love. Allow this image of you now to be received. See the gifts. See the talents. See the magic of who is here. For represented in who you are looking at now is the wisdom of all of the universe. The solutions of all that need to be solved. Everything is here that you need. Right here. In this place and in this time, everything is here. Take it in. Receive. Receive the magic and the wisdom and the power and the glory and the magic of the person who stands in front of you. Be filled up now by all that is here. For it is enough. What you see here is enough. We come into this world by ourselves, and we leave by ourselves by design. For there is nothing else that is needed than what you see now before you. Be filled up. And receive all that is here. And in this place now that you are in, as you look at yourself, I now ask that you receive all of the dopamine your body needs. All of it. Receive it now. Ask to receive all of the serotonin your body needs now. Just ask and receive it. Ask that all of the melatonin your body needs now be received. Just ask for it. Ask out loud. Ask now. For you see, in this magical place, by asking for it and willing to receive it, it will be received now. Ask and ye shall receive. So it is that the reason hormones are imbalanced is because we simply do not ask for it to be any other way. There is no great big deal about healing, as it turns out. The big deal is to acknowledge that the universe always gives what we ask. So ask for it. Ask for the dopamine that you need, and it will be given as long as you are open to receive it. Ask and ye shall receive. So this is at the most fundamental level of all, this level of balance. I invite each and every person to devote time this week to doing things for themselves, for giving themselves treats. For asking yourself, what do you need for yourself? And then giving it to yourself. The healing then is in giving to yourself and in being able to receive from others. And that, at the most fundamental level, is what will balance out hormones. Being able to receive, giving to yourself. It is not selfish, you see. It is the greatest gift of all. The gift to acknowledge what life really means. And now, in this place, in this room of yours, before this mirror, I invite you to come back down to the very first floor of the building, to exit this most magical city and return to the room that you are at now, or the place you are at now, back to center, back to home, with an invitation that you will not forget. The invitation to ask yourself, what do you need now? The invitation to give it to yourself. And the invitation each and every time anyone calls and says, what can I do for you? give them an answer. The answer is not nothing, I'm fine. The answer is, yes, you can do something for me, and ask for it. If you are wondering why your hormones are out of balance, ask yourself, have you ever asked for them to be in balance? Have you ever simply asked for more dopamine? Or some of you have too much dopamine, for less dopamine? Simply ask for it, and it will be given. And my friends, that is what is happening at Parkinson's Recovery on the shores of the Puget Sound. This is Robert Rogers, where all of the men are handsome, all of the women are smart, and all of the children are loved. Know that you are on the road to recovery. Good day.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end. Welcome.